Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Welcome back to Conscious Pathways, where we reimagine education at the center of social justice and heart-centering learning. I'm your host, Brittany. As always, I'm very excited and happy for you to be here. Today's conversation is one that will sure stay with you. I'm joined by Nick Marmolejo, an award-winning educator, TEDx speaker, advocate for purpose-driven learning. Nick's journey into education was deeply shaped by mentorship, and now he has a calling to shift how we think about school, not just as a place for academics, but as a space for purpose and connection and possibility. Together, we explore the power of cultivating purpose with our students, and why this might just be the missing link between education and the future of meaningful work. Nick shares his deeply honest reflections, sharp insights, and even a sneak peek into his upcoming children's book that centers autism and a purpose for compassion and care. Throughout our conversation, Nick shares his deep reflections, his sharp insight, and even gives us a keen sneak peek into his children's book that centers autism and purpose with compassion and care. So if you are a social justice curious parent, educator, advocate, or just someone who simply wonders how we can better support that next generation, this is an episode for you. Let's hop into it. Welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today, I am joined by Nick Marmolejo. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me here to your space.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you here. Tell me a little bit about your journey into education.
It's a great question. I would say that I don't have one of those amazing stories where I just grew up knowing that I was going to be a teacher. I would say the opposite, actually. I never imagined myself as a teacher. But yeah, it takes me back to, though, my two favorite teachers. I think maybe we all have someone like that we can think of, and maybe we're still friends with them. I had two teachers, one by the name of Miss Tu and another by the name of Miss Durham. Both played a really pivotal role in just kind of keeping me on the straight track, just being really great mentors along the way. I would actually credit the actual like catalyst to that with Teach for America. So Teach for America at the end of college kind of plucked me up, as they do many others. And I look back and I thank them. I thank that experience. And I would never have become a teacher if they wouldn't have opened that door for me and kind of provided a pathway.
Yes. And what about that experience really kind of gave you that passion for education? Is there anything particular that stood out to you?
You know, it was just a love, I would say, for people from all industries who had a passion for helping children. Many people are going to go on to become like a doctor or attorneys. And by the way, a lot of those people were much smarter than me. But we all had this shared passion of going into a classroom, having an impact on kids' lives. That's really just the root of it, I would say. That was my one memorable thing. In fact, we had the director out in San Antonio at the time. Her name is Laura Saldivar Luna. And she said something one of the first days that we ever met as a cohort. She said, our mission is one day all children, right? And so we always had that kind of North Star of this was a long-term commitment. This was not a two-year commitment, as they always said. So that's probably the one phrase I think that really stood out to me.
I actually really love that. I love that it's open to a lot of different interpretations. Like you could take that in a number of different ways, but it's also, it's very holistic. I'm going to be taking that.
Yeah, you're right, right? Like I think people probably get different things from that, right? When if someone just broadly says one day, I mean, what it means to me, it might mean something different to you. But I think we base all of that too, like off of our lived experiences. And I think just like access to education, quality teachers who cared, like that mattered to me. And so I think that's kind of how I interpret it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I believe that. Because I think, like you said, I think it goes into kind of social justice and social justice pedagogy, thinking that change happens over time. And sometimes we get really caught up on the, I want it to happen right here, right now. We get caught up in the urgency of it. And there is a lot of urgency, you know, we're seeing, especially with education today, there's definitely a lot of urgency in our work, but knowing that good change happens over time. And as things change, we learn and grow. And so that someday, you know, it might not look the same way that we imagined it today. It might grow and change and shift a little bit, but we know that that's guiding force. That's our North Star, right? That's where we're going to. Like, it kind of gives you that sense of hope that we are going to get to there one day. Like, it is going to happen. And as long as we stay together and as long as we stay ready to keep doing this work, then we'll get there. I might have just interpreted that a whole other way, but.
No, you actually bring up a really good point. I think of the word sustainable or sustainability, because if you go into any given classroom in the US, I mean, especially public schools, there's a big burden and a big responsibility on teachers to like impact every child that they come across. And that's it. Like I said, that's a good thing and that's a heavy thing to carry. But when you really think about it, our goal as teachers is not to have those kids depend on us forever, right? We want them to be self-sustaining and their own advocates and have their own autonomy. And the only way that we could sustainably do that is by teaching them to love to learn more than anything else. So I would say the best teachers, thinking of my former teachers and maybe people listening out there have someone like that, but it really starts there and it feeds all the other effort. As long as you start with loving to learn and making sure that every kid believes that and has that.
Yes. And actually that perfectly segues into my next question, which is something you talk a lot about, is purpose-driven learning. Can you share a little bit more about what that means and what that missing link is in today's education?
Yeah, so I describe purpose, right? And so we think of it in this realm of, right, it's this complex thing that's hard to define. Some believe that it exists, some believe that it doesn't. I'm in the group that believes that it exists for every single child, every single person. And so my definition is the best of what you're equipped with to help others solve problems. And a lot of times the misconceptions that we put out there are go follow your passion, right? But we don't talk about purpose so much. We openly talk about, we tell our students, our kids, follow your passion and you'll never work a day in your life. And I'm like, well, sounds good. So there's a lot of truthiness out there around the topic. And I think what I'm passionate about, I'll use that, is dispelling those myths and opening up that conversation. Because like I said, I think the only way we can sustainably move forward is if every child has a love for learning. And then from there, they're thinking about, hey, what do I have in lived experiences and knowledge? What do I enjoy? And how can I go out and use that to help others? Because I think the last thing I would want in the situation when I talk about purpose-driven education is people being under the assumption that you're just helping others matter-of-factly, like help others. It sounds good. No, I mean, like there's very specific ways that we can serve each other and it's fulfilling for us and it maximizes our potential to help other people. So does that kind of answer your question?
Yes. Yeah, I think, like you said, purpose is kind of one of those hard words to define because it can mean a multitude of different things. But when you break it down into those kind of more finite terms and what it means and what it feels like, and especially for students, what that looks like and what that feels like. You've talked about this before, but in education, we've kind of got so inundated with teaching to the test. We've got so inundated with the worksheets and kind of the work of it, but we kind of forget what the purpose of education is, right? We kind of forget what our intention here is, like our intentionality as educators in that classroom. I know I don't want to build a classroom of students who are completely dependent on me for their learning. That's not really fun for me. That means I'm doing a whole lot of work. That means I'm doing a whole lot of work off the clock. That means I'm doing a whole lot of extra work in the classroom. Whereas when we build children's skills up and we build student skills up to do the critical thinking, to do that work, to ask those questions, right? Then one, that makes my job a whole heck of a lot easier. But also, I know that I am building up these student skills they will take with them for the rest of their lives, right? They're not depending on me to learn. They're not depending on me to be the bringer of knowledge, right? They are completely empowered to know that they have knowledge that they bring to the table, that they have knowledge that they can learn from each other, that if they don't know things, like, we can figure that out together. And there's so many different ways that we can do that and experience that. And I think that falls into that realm of purpose, right? It's such a powerful thing.
It really is. Actually, you bring up a lot of good points, and I'm so happy that we get to have this conversation. When I was preparing for my TEDx, I was reaching out to workforce directors, superintendents, people at the vice provost level at universities, and it was great that they gave me their time, but I kept asking them the same question. And I forget where it came from. Like, it popped in my head one day, or I asked it to someone on LinkedIn, but the question is simply, what's the purpose of school? Or what's the point of school? And you know what kind of responses I got? You want to take a guess? All over the place.
Job readiness.
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. Right. People said job readiness, and they said things like preparing people for the workforce. And I get it. But really, no one agreed. No adult agreed. And more importantly, no one was succinct. Everyone had, I mean, lengthy responses. It was like this one powerful question that, like, actually, that's how a lot of people would start their response. They would say, wow, what a good question. What a powerful question. That's a complex question. And I just thought, is it really? I don't know if that's the childlike person in me, but yeah. So I think I would challenge parents and kids and teachers and everyone to really rethink that. Like, what is the point of school? And I think if we can come to some kind of agreement there, then it'll help set our priorities. And then we can be productive. If we're aiming in the wrong direction or kind of climbing up the wrong wall, then everything else is kind of fruitless and it's really hard to get traction.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think there's a lot of viewpoints in education and even the different facets of education, even like reading, Common Core, all these different strategies that we think and talk about. But I think when we really go back to our intentionality, what is our intention with education? What is it that we are hoping students do learn? What are we hoping that they feel? And within, you know, the confines of school, even talking about, is there a difference between school and education? And what does that difference look like? There's so many ways that if we just got to that point of defining what that meant. And I remember a conversation I had a couple episodes ago with Dr. Eliana Edwards, and she was saying that we actually don't have agreed upon definition of what safety looks like in schools. And that kind of blew my mind in a lot of ways, because it's such an important and integral part of how we move about our lives, especially when we're going to school. School safety is the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Its safety is an important aspect. It's right there here. It's like one of the number one things we need. But not having this agreed upon definition, and do we need an agreed upon definition? And what does that look like? It's been swirling around in my head ever since. I feel like that conversation changed my brain chemistry, because I'm like, what does that mean? What does that look like? How should students feel in school? But similar concepts, right? Especially when we're thinking about purpose and why do we do that? And what is the intention? And I think if we do have an agreed upon idea about what that looks like, it can help us to be more intentional in our classrooms and be more unified in our classrooms. And looking at the research and the data, I think that can also help us to make decisions that are more holistic for the students who are in our classrooms right now, because students are going to be different than they were 10 years ago, and they're going to be different than they are 10 years from now. A lot of things to think about and consider.
There really is. And I think when I get to have these conversations with people, one, I'm so fulfilled by them. But the other thing is that I think people go, well, there's pedagogy, it's so complex. And I go, but maybe that's the problem, is that we've made it so complex. Maybe we really need to scale it back. There's all of these videos, if you watch Reels like on IG or Facebook, they do a really good job about teaching you about the history of education and kind of why the system was created the way it was created and why it's doing what it's doing. And I go, that's great. So if we know that that's why it's created, then we need to go back to that point, because everything else it's like climbing uphill, like super steep. But when you bring up the topic of safety, you know, and I didn't really realize we were going to talk about that. Two things came to mind. One, I actually had to change the title of my TEDx. So I chose to what it's currently titled now, its original title, but it was because of the safety topic. And then the other thing I think of is I asked plenty of educators, hey, when you walk into a school, right, and you're assessing it, whether you're a consultant or you're a parent choosing a school, how long does it take you to know whether or not that's a good school? I'm curious, how long do you think it would take like a master educator to know if it was a good school? I'm challenging you with this one. What do you think they said?
I'd say within a couple of minutes, maybe.
Absolutely right. At first, they said 15. And then in further conversation, they said, no, probably in 3 to 5 minutes, I could tell you. And the first thing that came up was safety.
Okay.
Is the school safe? Do they have protocols in place? But also, does it feel safe? Then you can talk about nurturing and then you can talk about academics. And I think it shocks a lot of people when I tell them, like, hey, learning's going to happen, but first safety and the nurturing piece, the academics will be fed from those things. And so I'm so glad you brought up the safety topic.
It's an underrated topic and it covers so many different aspects, right? I think when we think about safety, we immediately go to like physical safety. Mm-hmm. Is the building secure? Like, do they have plans in place? Like all these different things, we go to that physical safety component, right? And especially the top of our mind, especially these days are, you know, school shootings and how are we keeping our students safe from outside forces? How are we keeping our students safe from the weather, the environment, right? So I think that's what the first thing that comes to mind. And it is very important. It's an incredibly important thing to focus on. But there's also that psychological safety. There's also identity safety. Do I feel safe to express myself? Do I feel safe to be myself? Do I feel safe to express, have the full expression of who I am, right? There's that academic safety component. Do I feel safe to express myself? Do I feel safe to challenge, you know, the curriculum or challenge the adults in the room? Can I do that without facing, you know, repercussions? Especially we're looking at even in higher education with students expressing themselves and freedom of speech and everything. And the more students who are getting penalized for protesting and using their voice, right? This is what school is for. This is what college is for, right? It's supposed to have, we're supposed to let them protest. We're supposed to let them express themselves. And to see that, right, that really challenges that freedom of speech. And it makes that academic safety, it lowers students' sense of academic safety. Because if I can't protest what I know and feel is wrong, what can I do? There's so many different aspects of safety. Is there racial safety? Again, that goes into that identity safety, you know, is our curriculum, is it culturally responsive? Is it relevant? Is it sustaining? So many aspects of what goes into safety. And while there are aspects of it, like I said, physical safety is really important. It's integral. There's all these other aspects that are just as important to how students get to show up and how families get to show up. And I agree, when I walk into a school, that's the number one thing that I'm looking for. I'm looking at, how easy was it for me to get into this building? It shouldn't really be that easy for me to just walk onto a school campus and be like, I'm here now. And if I'm putting my child somewhere, that's the one thing I'm looking at. Like, how easy is it for someone to get on this campus? How do I feel when I walk into that building? Do I feel welcomed? Am I greeted by people who seem friendly and want me to be there? So yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. So I'm glad that you said that.
What happens too, and I realize this because I had an actual moment like this morning. This is, my brain is going everywhere in a good way. But an example would be, I actually walked into my son's, his former preschool today, and he's no longer in preschool, he's in grade school. And I was looking for a form that I needed. Yeah, I had to file taxes. You know how that goes. And in doing that, I walk in, I go, oh, like the process to get in looked different. And it actually looked a lot easier. I mean, it was just, I could go in there and I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. But what I also know is that with turnover, staff turnover, whether you're talking about teachers or directors or principals, the quality, like the effectiveness of those procedures and those processes, like they get weaker. And we have little control over that because you got to train people up. They have to be bought into it. And so I didn't comment or anything, but I just thought that was really easy for me to walk in. I wish that wasn't the case. So.
It's one of those things. I'll have friends who are expecting, and you know, that's one of the things that they're constantly asking me, because my background's in early childhood education, and they're like, what should I be looking for? And a lot of the questions I seem to get are more about like curriculum and about the school philosophy. And those are important questions to know, right? It's important to go to a school philosophy that aligns with what your family values and also what you think that your child would thrive in. Not every child's going to thrive in Montessori, just like not every child is going to thrive in Reggio. It's my favorite, so I think thrive in it. But not every child is going to thrive in those environments. And so as the parent or guardian, you're going to know your child and you're going to know what they need and what they're going to thrive in. But that's number one. The first thing I always tell them, like, how safe does it feel? Right. And, you know, I always go into the different aspects of safety. You know, do you feel welcome? Do you feel like you're represented? When you walk in, you see a classroom. Do you see families that look like your family? Do you see books that represent, you know, your family? Do you see yourself represented in the toys? Do you see yourself represented in the staff? Those are all aspects of safety as well. Like, do you feel like you're going to be safe? Do you think your child will feel like they're safe there? But also the biggest thing is how easy was it for you to get on that campus? And if it was too easy, you might not want to go there.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, just some really great staff who's bought in goes a long way, because I've seen early childhood places where they have all the bells and whistles, and yet it still didn't feel as safe. And there was other things that were also going on that made that very clear. But a great staff can make up for that. You know, it truly can. And by the way, you know what your friends should do? They should just take you with them. You tell them, yes, yes, no. I'm kidding.
Right. I just get to go on all the tours. I'm like, this is fun.
Don't forget your hourly rate, whatever that is.
Yes. Yeah. Just, I got to charge my hourly rate. Like, if you're going to take me all these tours, hawk up the coins. But I think we're talking about safety, and especially for students and families who have been systematically and historically marginalized, especially in education, safety and belonging is something that is incredibly important, but it's not always something that gets talked about. And so going back to the idea of purpose-driven learning, how do you think that helps to drive equity and kind of make meaning in learning with education?
That's a great question. So when I think about purpose, so here's the thing. I am a big proponent that your words are either pulling people apart or bringing them together. And so as I was ruminating after I left the classroom, I kept thinking, like, what is missing, right? What is going to bring people together? What's hard to argue about? What is in our identity? And so as I thought of that, and I had plenty of conversations, purpose kept coming up as that word for me. And I just thought, look, if we all have it, which again, I believe, then that's like our starting point. From there, it's okay, now we got to agree on a definition. We got to break down some of the myths about it. But to me, that's the one marker of our identity that we actually share and we can talk about openly. And I think it helps us get back to those kind of conversations in the first place, because it seems so hard to these days to bring up all the other pieces of our identity without like triggering others or even sometimes feeling triggered ourselves. And so, yeah, I just think purpose is a unifying word, it's a unifying topic. How do you be combative around that? So at the worst that I could
find a way.
Yes, that's fair. Maybe I'm overly optimistic. So I hope that was clear. You know, I just think it's a unifying word and it actually leads mm-hmm. to some of those tougher conversations too.
I think so. And I definitely agree. I think shifting to more purposeful alignment is something that I think you can get buy-in from admin and teachers and families and children, right? One question when I was in the classroom that I would always ask of my parents is, what are your goals for your child in my classroom this year? What do you hope that they walk out of here learning? And their answers give me a lot of insight into what they value, what's important to them, you know, whether that's academics or whether that's social emotional learning or whether that's just they want them to be happy, right? It gives me a lot of insight into what they value and what they want. And then I can make sure that I'm, you know, amending my classroom and amending what I need. So whether that's I'm giving them a little bit more resources on things, you know, some families are very like academically rigid. Like, I want my kid to do this. I want them to write their name and read by the time they go to kindergarten. And as an educator, I know that are there some kids who can do that? Sure. Yeah. There are some kids who can read and write their name by the time they go to kindergarten, but that's not the norm. That's not developmentally appropriate practice to assume that all kids can get there. There's a lot of factors that go into kids being able to do that. And I would even argue, I don't think that kids under the age of like 8 are actually like reading to comprehend. I think they've just memorized things and they're regurgitating what they've memorized. So is that actually reading? When we really think about it, I don't think that's actually reading if you're not comprehending really what you're reading, but that's a whole other conversation. So, you know, it just gives me opportunities to let them know what we're doing in the classroom. But everything I want to do in the classroom is intentional. So whether that I just need to communicate to the parents more what we're doing and why we're doing that, or communicating that to the admin, again, what we're doing and why we're doing it, but just making sure that it's very intentional. Everything, every toy I bring into the classroom, every book I bring into the classroom, every person I bring in the classroom, I'm doing that. It's an intentional choice. I have a reason for why I'm doing it. And I think I harp on this a lot, but I think that's really the biggest thing about having a reflective teaching practice is that you need to be able to reflect on who's in your classroom. You need to reflect on your practices, and are your practices being challenged? And if so, what can you do to help that? What can you do to help that student? What can you do to help that family? I think that's kind of the wonderful, glorious thing about education is that we're just in a field that we constantly get to learn new things and try out new practices. And that's a beautiful part of the work that we get to do every day.
It is. I was going to ask you too, because so you ask parents that question right at the beginning of the year. How do you balance what they have to say with what the kid actually needs and expresses, and then your own like discernment? How do you balance that?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because there is that discernment met. So if I do have a parent that is very academic, and oh, this parent says, I want my kid to write their name and read their name and know all their letters and all their numbers by the time they go to kindergarten. And I'm looking at this kid, and this kid could not care less about letters, numbers. Kid does not give any sort of care in the world about those things. It gives me a lot of understanding about, one, where this family is coming from, what they value, what's important to them. I agree that learning is going to happen in a multitude of ways, right? Learning is always happening, and I can be really intentional about that. So part of that means that I might just be sharing a little bit more information with this family about what developmentally appropriate practice looks like. And so what I've done in the past is, you know, say I'm playing, you know, I put out Play-Doh, right? There's a reason I'm not just putting out Play-Doh just because, like,
we all love Play-Doh. It's okay.
We love some Play-Doh, right? But usually there's a purpose, right? And either there's some fine motor skills I want them to work on, or there's hand-eye coordination I want them to work on. And so if I know that literacy is important to that family, I think literacy is important for everyone, right? And so just general practices in my classroom is, you know, we do read books. If the kids are interested in it, great. If they're not, great. I find it as a, sometimes it's a bit of a challenge, because if I have a kid who just is not interested, and I've had kids in my class who, again, not interested in print, not interested in letters, not interested in spelling their name, like they do not want that. And they're actively like, get that away from me. What I do in those moments is I find things that are interesting to them. So I had a kid who loved anything superhero. This kid loved it, could not get enough of it. And so I would go to the library and I got Spider-Man comic book and I read through it to make sure it was appropriate, that there weren't any, you know, inappropriate dialogues, and there was Spider-Man. So I didn't think so, but I read through it. I was like, okay, this seems like a fun thing, and brought that in. I just kind of left it on the circle time mat. And that was the first time he came to the circle time rug, right? He did not care about circle time at all. But that day he was like, oh, Spider-Man's there? I'll check this out, right? And being able to balance that, right? Because I value the kids' interests. I value following their lead. I value having them become independent thinkers and learners, and they're super not interested in letters and numbers. I'm okay with that, because they're going to learn it eventually. Right? And if they don't, then maybe there's something deeper that we need to be looking at. Maybe there's some developmental delays that we need to be attuned to and aware of. But I know, for the most part, if you go through school, you're going to learn letters and numbers, and you're probably going to learn to read in some capacity, right? And so that's kind of what I do. I kind of balance that discernment, right? Like, I'm not going to overly push things in the classroom that aren't in alignment with my philosophy and aren't in alignment with the school's philosophy and aren't developmentally appropriate. And sometimes that's just a teachable moment, whether that's a teachable moment for a student, a teachable moment for a family, a teachable moment for us as a school community. But I think part of that is when families are coming into my classroom, I make it very known what we do in this classroom, what we value in this classroom. And so they know what they're walking into. They're not surprised. And I'm like, this is what we're talking about. This is what we're doing. We're going to do social emotional learning. We're going to talk about empathy. We're going to talk about social justice. We're going to talk about, you know, race and all these different things, because that's what we do as a community. And that's what we do as a diverse community and a diverse society. So it's a lot. It's a balancing act. I'm not going to say it's easy, but
it's really
a big balancing act.
You gave a really good example. And I think what you did really well in the example of the Spider-Man comic book was you met him where he was at, and it brought him to the carpet. And so those little seeds like that are planting the love for learning. And so you're right. It's going to fuel, right? And because he, at some point, that child, like others, will take ownership over their learning. But it starts with those, like what seem like very minor decisions, like very, yeah, this is never going to be the thing that is the one stop all fix, like solution. But you should give yourself a pat on the back, because I think like that is amazing. I wish we had more time in schools for teachers to feel like they had that decision making. And I think what that actually does is when we have time, it actually relieves some of what feels like a burden or even some misplaced mindset around like being a savior. Like none of us have to carry that, right? It's a collective effort and it's not a burden. We really need to get back, I think, to the basics so that teachers can enjoy their work, be fulfilled by it, and mentor kids so that kids can take ownership over their learning. I mean, we can't spoon feed it to them. It's just going to take too long anyways, even if we could.
I agree. And one of the things that I love about the Reggio Emilia philosophy is that idea of continuation of care. And so the children that you start with, the idea is that you get to grow with them. And so in the school that I worked at, they would start at age, well, they would start at infants and toddlers, but I started with them when they were two. And so the idea was that I would be their teacher all the way up until they left us and went to kindergarten.
Wow.
But that really does give you that time to really get to know your families, really get to know your student, know what makes them ticks, knows what they love, knows what, like how to get them to engage in things, right? Like I knew that kid loved superheroes. So I knew if I brought anything superhero related into that classroom, he was going to be locked in, right? And so if my goal is to help to develop that love of learning, that love of print media, that love of books and pictures, and just be interested in it, right?
Yes.
If all I did that entire year was get him interested in it, I succeeded, right? Because I feel like that is in my realm of early childhood. That's my job. My job is to get them to love learning, to be interested in learning, to see the value in learning. And again, if I did that, then I have won. And I have won the lotto.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You totally get it. You totally get it. Like through and through, I think you're a fine educator. And I think the children that you've and the families that you've gotten to impact are lucky to have spent time with you. And, you know, I just wish that more kids get to have that, like get to receive that from you, but then from other teachers too.
Yes, so the hope and the goal is inspiring other educators, other parents out there. And speaking of that, so you have another project that you've been working on as well. A book I hear that you've been working on. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so the book is called Where's My Compass? It's about a 10-year-old boy with autism who goes on a journey to find his father's missing compass, but instead he actually teaches us the secret to purpose. And so it's wrapped up in this entire idea of, right, we think about those who are disadvantaged and those who are often not given the voice, the kind of advocacy that they need. And I thought, who's the perfect group, the perfect community to really communicate the value of purpose in every single child? And so in working on this book, I interviewed dozens of experts on the topic of autism. So parents, clinicians, diagnosticians, that whole world opened up to me. I mean, they're so welcoming and they're also very direct, which I love because they taught me things that I otherwise wouldn't have known because I had limited experience, I would say, in the classroom with children with autism. And if you've ever heard the saying, right, like if you've met one child with autism, well, you've met one child with autism. And so I would say that this book has been a passion project of mine for quite some time. And it's 800 words, but I crank out 800 words like any given day, no problem. I mean, maybe we all do in texting and whatnot, but I'm telling you, an 800 word children book, it's a project for sure.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I'd love to pick your brain on that process because 800 words just seems like so much, but at the same time, you have to craft an entire story from beginning, middle, and end. And that's an incredible process. And I love that the focus is, you know, a child with autism and kind of seeing things in their eyes and seeing things through their world. I agree. I think that's kind of the perfect perspective to really take on this. You know, what have you learned throughout this process of speaking to people with autism and writing this book and really getting that idea of purpose through? What have you learned through that process?
Yeah. So both purpose and the topic of autism are what I would consider like high concept. They're often complex topics. There's a lot that goes into it. And so I think that's what makes it really hard to really have a conversation. But what I've learned is that if you just ask this community, like, hey, I am curious about this, please enlighten me, give me insight, show me. I mean, they, like I said, they were very welcoming into that world. What I learned is that these families, their idea of their children succeeding is vastly different than what schools are actually aiming for right now. No parent of a child with autism said, I want my kid to graduate in the top 10%. No, they also didn't say, I want my kid to have a high school diploma. Instead, they said things like, I want my kid to live an independent, meaningful life. And think about that. I mean, I'm almost tearing up just talking about it because they meant it. They really meant it. And I'm just very grateful for that community. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel similarly. And I've worked with, you know, students with special needs and students with autism and students with Down syndrome. And I've heard the sentiment as well from parents working with their kids and looking at what are your goals? What would you love for them to be able to do by the end of this year? And that's the sentiment that I've heard a lot as well. Like, I want them to be independent. I want them to make friends. I want them to be happy. I want them to be successful and whatever that means to them. And that is so empowering in so many different ways, right? Because it puts it back in their hands of, I believe that you have the power to do this, right? And they for sure believe they have the power to do anything. So
yes,
it's really about how do you harness that and how do you give them the skills? And also, how do you not put out their flame? How do you help them to maintain that fire, right? That is the most important thing in the world to me, is especially in education, we're working with these kiddos. How do we help them navigate life, but also keep their fire burning, right? How do we not diminish their flame, like let their flame thrive, but give them the skills and the tools to do that? How do we do that? It's constantly the question that's top of my mind.
We mostly have to stay out of their way. This is what I would say. It's kind of like, maybe herding cats isn't the best definition. I coach like boys basketball and soccer and things like that. And so sometimes I say that playfully, but it really is just kind of giving them guidance along the way and course correcting and asking them a lot of questions along the way to get their brain moving. They'll fill in the answers. You know, I'm a big fan of like the Socratic method. And so you ask great questions, I think you get great answers.
And on that note, can you tell me how you reimagine education?
I reimagine education as purpose-driven, right? And when I say that, I mean teachers and students walking into school excited to be there. Families engaged at the highest level and in every school across the country. And it starts with public schools. So I imagine teachers who retired early returning to the field, whether that be to teach again full time or to substitute, right? We have a huge shortage in our pools across the country of high quality teachers. And when I say high quality, what I first mean, I think what we've been talking about is people who really care, who are invested in the future of these children and their colleagues. And so I imagine a resurgence of like a nostalgic love for the profession of teaching and a respect for teachers. And imagine kids walking into school and just lit up because they want to be there. They don't want to go home, not because they don't love their family and their parents, but they're just like, I just had so much fun and so much was poured into me here that why wouldn't I want to stay here? And so I think on a more ground level, what I imagine is us getting our priorities straight. I think that we've complicated it. And I think when we start with things like, say, literacy, and I don't mean like just teaching to read. Yeah, I mean, there's the science of reading that I'm a big proponent of. I think it's just so simple when you give kids the time to focus on the fundamentals and you do it in a way that's actually fun, that it'll feed everything else. Like math will come, science will come, history will come, but you start there and you've opened up their world to learning on their own. I use my son as an example of that. Him learning to read at a really young age. And I think that that was just purely getting back to the basics. So I just imagine us getting back to the basics, really.
Yes, back to the basics. I love that. And yes, let's get back to the basics of education. Let's get back into our purpose and our intentionality. There's so much there. Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story and sharing your insights. I know there's so much that I have in my mind now to just chew on and think on and just reflect on and have lots of aha moments after after this episode. Anything else? Or where can my audience find you?
Yeah, so I'd love for them to check out my TEDx talk on YouTube. It just landed there actually a couple of days ago. It's titled, Are Schools Destroying Purpose? But don't let that scare you away. It's really a conversation starter. I think that if they give it a look, maybe 1 to 2 minutes, at least they'll notice that it's really an invitation to all the things that we've been talking about today. But if not there, find me on LinkedIn. I'm active there. And I'm just creating the largest collective of purpose-driven educators. So please, let's connect, let's network, and happy to advance teachers in any way professionally that I can too.
Absolutely. And I'll link all of that in our show notes below. So if you want to connect with Nick and watch that TED Talk, it'll be right there. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining me, for sharing your insights, for sharing your story. I'm just so excited that our paths have crossed. So thank you.
I'm thankful as well. Honored to be on your show, to share your space. And you really do ask great questions. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye.
I hope this conversation with Nick sparked something in you as a reminder that purpose isn't just a buzzword. It's a critical ingredient to building schools that are truly serving all children. If you're walking away from this conversation thinking, how can we build safer, more intentional spaces for students to thrive? Then you are not alone. I promise you, you're not alone. As Nick so beautifully put it, education should be a place where young people don't just prepare for work, but discover who they are and what lights them up. Be sure to check out his TEDx talks, Are Schools Destroying Purpose? And keep an eye out for his upcoming children's book, Where's My Compass? It's one that you'll definitely want on your shelf. And all of that will be linked in the show notes. And if you found value in this episode, because I know you did, don't forget to follow, share, and leave a rating or review. It really does help the podcast find more listeners just like you. And until next time, navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you there for more transformative conversations.